content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Hello and welcome to the November 2013 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm your host, George Douglas. This monthly program is brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how you can do that later in this program. Well, this program is all about books, with special emphasis on those available from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now, the library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Did you know that? Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well, both digital and still a few cassette left. The library has more than 11,000 patrons across the state, and if you are not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that as well at the end of this program. Now, this month, we're going to take a look at the most popular books checked out during the month of October in 2013 at the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We're going to begin this program with a very popular book last month called The Day of the Storm by British author Rosamund Pilcher. When you read a novel by Rosamund Pilcher, you enter a special world where emotions sing from the heart, a world that lovingly captures the ties that bind us to one another, the joys and sorrows, heartbreaks and misunderstandings, and glad, perfect moments when we are in true harmony, a world filled with evocative, engrossing, and above all, enjoyable portraits of people's lives and loves tenderly laid open for us. Well, on the last day of her mother's life, Rebecca learns that she has a family in Cornwall, England, and she sets out to find the grandfather and cousin that she has never known. But only the enigmatic Joss Gardner, the outsider who seems to be the apple of her grandfather's eye, can help her understand the dark currents that lie behind her family's loving reception. The book is called The Day of the Storm by Rosamund Pilcher. She has written many, many books, and that particular one was the most popular this past month at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. Now we're going to talk about another very, very popular book, The Cuckoo's Calling by Robert Galbraith, of course, is the pseudonym of J.K. Rowling. Here's the plot for this particular story. It was very popular this past month. Cormoran Strike, private investigator, is hired by John Bristow, the adopted brother of famous supermodel Lula Landry. Bristow wants Strike to investigate his sister's supposed suicide. Bristow's other sibling, a brother named Charlie, had been a schoolmate of Strike before his death, when he fell into a quarry while riding on his bicycle. Strike is initially skeptical, having read extensive media coverage following the case, and is unwilling to reopen such a thoroughly investigated case. As the interviewing process proceeds, he encounters Lula Landry's security guard, personal driver, uncle, friends, and designer. Each character recounts their recollections of Lula as Strike comes to realize that the circumstances of her death are more ambiguous than he had imagined. Cormoran interviews several people, such as Lula and John's maternal uncle, Tony Landry, Lula's homeless friend, Rochelle, and her boyfriend. He is especially intrigued by the statement of Tansy Bestegui, Lula's downstairs neighbor, who said she heard Lula fighting with a man and then falling from her balcony. It is clear she could not have heard it from two floors below, so her statement is dismissed. However, in reality, her husband had found her with cocaine and then pushed her out onto the balcony and locked her out there, which was how she heard it. She did not reveal her true location when she heard the fighting, because it was 10 below zero outside when her husband had pushed her onto the balcony, and her husband had forced her to remain silent, fearful of being arrested for abusing Tansy. Well, later, Rochelle Onafad is found dead, killed hours after leaving a meeting with Strike. He decides that she must have been in contact with Lulu's murderer, whether she knew that person had killed Lula or not. Lula, as a mixed-race girl adopted into a wealthy white family, took a special interest in investigating her biological roots before her death. He discovers that the murder of Lula was for the $10 million that she had possessed. Near the book's end, before Robin leaves for her next job, Strike gives Robin with a green silk dress she had tried on and loved when they had gone searching for information at Vashti, a dress shop that Lula had frequently bought clothes from. Finally, the two decide that Robin will stay on. Both are happy about the decision, though Strike reflects that Matthew, Robin's fiancé, would not be happy about the fact that he had purchased the gown for her. The novel closes with Strike at a doctor's appointment for his injured leg. This particular book was the first non-Harry Potter book that J.K. Rowling came out with under the pseudonym of Robert Galbraith, and has become very, very popular, especially at the North Carolina Library for the Blind this past month. If you run into trouble in Santa Fe, Ed Eagle is the man to see. Ed Eagle is the leading character here in Santa Fe Edge by the very popular author Stuart Woods. Ed Eagle, the 6'7", take-no-prisoners Santa Fe attorney, is no stranger to murder, corruption, or organized crime, both north and south of the border. His home in Santa Fe, a picturesque desert town where the wealthy enjoy the good life, seems like a welcome retreat from the grit and crime of big cities. But looks can be deceiving, and trouble has a way of finding Ed. A puzzling murder in a golfer's hacienda brings in a new client for Ed, but while his time is spent unraveling the complex web of sex, money, and false identity, a much more dangerous threat lurks, a ruthless and implacable enemy that has proved more than a match for him in the past has returned to Santa Fe, and this time she wants nothing less than all-out retribution. From the seamy prisons of Mexico to the glamorous movie sets of L.A. and the lush and exclusive resorts of Santa Fe, Ed Eagle and his team of private detectives must hunt or be hunted. That book is called Santa Fe Edge by Stuart Woods. Woods is the author of more than 30 novels, including the New York Times best-selling Stone Barrington and Holly Barker series. An avid sailor and pilot, he lives in New York City, Florida, and Maine. It's called Santa Fe Edge. I think you'll like that one. And now another very popular book this past month by James Patterson along with David Ellis, and this one is called The Mistress. James Patterson's scariest, sexiest standalone thriller since The Quickie. Ben isn't like most people. Unable to control his racing thoughts, he's a man consumed by his obsessions, movies, motorcycles, presidential trivia, and Diana Hotchkiss, a beautiful woman Ben knows he can never have. When Diana is found dead outside her apartment, Ben's infatuation drives him on a hunt to find out what happened to the love of his life. Ben soon discovers that the woman he pined for was hiding a shocking double life, and now someone is out to stop Ben from uncovering the truth about Diana's illicit affairs. In his most heart-pumping thriller yet, James Patterson plunges us into the depths of a mind tortured by paranoia and obsession on an action-packed chase through a world of danger and deceit. And that particular book is called Mistress, and it is by James Patterson and David Ellis. Now, I'm not quite finished with the mistress here. We always describe the summaries of the books and that type of thing, and they always sound pretty intriguing. But in this particular case, as I was doing my research on this particular book, I found that the mistress had at least one reviewer who was not the least bit enchanted with the story. And so what I thought I would do is read this book review now about the mistress by James Patterson and David Ellis. Listen to this now. This was my seventh James Patterson book, and I would say he writes better when he is not co-authoring. This is from the reviewer. When I read his Alex Cross series or Women's Mystery Club series, and when I read his Private series or The Mistress, the difference would be in front of you. The difference is like between day and night. This fact may be true that he has sold more than combining Stephen King, Dan Brown, and John Grisham, also 19 consecutive number one New York Times best-selling novels, and he holds the New York Times record for the most best-selling hardcover fiction titles by a single author. But books like Mistress, it feels, gone are the days when James Patterson was a real page-turner. It is just not his class, or I would say it's not him. It's a disgrace the way his books are written nowadays, Mistress being a lengthy novel of 448 pages. The plot and the story are acceptable. However, the way of telling the story, the way of portraying the first-person narrative, was not good at all. Actually, it was pretty bad. No reader would like to read the way this book is written. In the past, I have always enjoyed Patterson's books immensely. I used to like his style of short chapters and page-turning essence his books had, but now it seems, well, what the heck am I reading? It's better if I read my textbooks. After reading 100 pages, you would realize that the main character of the book, Ben, that we talked about in the previous summary here, might be an interesting character in this psychological thriller, but reading further, you will realize that before you just had a bad thought. Though I agree it's a fast read, but I had to force myself to finish it. The character of Ben often goes on and on about mundane facts which have nothing to do at all with the storyline, and due to this, he is an annoying character. I am disappointed with this one. Looks like I'll have to go back to Alex Cross or the Women's Mystery Club. I would advise not to buy and waste your money, the reviewer says. Either loan it or borrow it from a library. And that is the way people did actually take advantage of this book and read it, was by listening to it on digital recording from the North Carolina Library for the Blind. So you don't actually have to buy it, but I just wanted to be upfront about that because I had read mixed reviews about that particular book. That was The Mistress by James Patterson and David Ellis. Now we have another book that was extremely popular in the top 10 this past month at the North Carolina Library for the Blind, and it was also by Rosamund Pilcher, whom we read about just a little while ago. This one is entitled The Empty House. When I was ill a few weeks ago, I reread a book that had been dancing at the edge of my mind, this reviewer says, The Empty House by Rosamund Pilcher. It's about fields and combines silk dresses and nannies, kittens and hidden beaches, betrayal and loyalty, motherhood and friendship, overcoming oneself and trusting in others. Many Rosamund Pilcher books, and I've read them all several times, have a sharp edge to them. In The Empty House, that edge is softened, and the story of Virginia overcoming herself and her past, reclaiming her children, and understanding her mother is one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. That list sounds very dramatic, but the book, like Virginia, is not dramatic at all. It's ordinary life, portrayed in a magical way, with a few magical ingredients, like Cornish farmer Eustace, thrown in. The Empty House may be a light read, but lurking under the surface are all sorts of issues to contemplate. The plot may be in some ways predictable, but the emotional impact never is. And the atmosphere is among the most welcoming of any of Rosamund Pilcher's books. Do note that God is not a part of Virginia's life, and The Empty House is not a Christian book. However, in many ways, the world it presents is more wholesome than that of most contemporary Christian fiction. When you need a lovely book with a peaceful atmosphere that will stay with you, I encourage you to read The Empty House. That was a wonderful review about the book The Empty House by Rosamund Pilcher. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately from the Triangle Radio Reading Service, brought to you by the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. Our next review today is about the book entitled Why Do Dogs Have Wet Noses and Other Imponderables of Everyday Life? And this is a book written by David Feldman, and this was one of the most popular ones during October. Why Dogs Have Wet Noses and Other Imponderables has been around for nearly 20 years, but it has not lost its charm. David Feldman answers some questions I've been wondering about for years, like, why do foreign pop and rock performers sing with an American accent? Good question, huh? Or have you ever wondered why peaches are fuzzy? Then there is the question of the missing socks. My own take on socks is that they get caught inside other clothes and are rediscovered later. However, I do have some socks that have never reappeared. Where did they go? Well, this book gives some insight into questions like this, and most of them are fun and enjoyable to read. I think you might like this one. It is called Why Do Dogs Have Wet Noses and Other Imponderables of Everyday Life? And the author is David Feldman. Here's another very popular author at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. It's by the author Lee Child, and this particular book, it was a big one in October. It's called Without Fail. It's the sixth book in the Jack Reacher series written by Lee Child, and it was originally published by Putnam in 2002. Reacher arrives in Atlantic City, New Jersey, after hitching a ride with a couple of aging musicians. He is accosted there by Mary Ellen Froelich, a beautiful Secret Service agent who managed to track him down. Now, she has a special request for him. She consults him on how he could kill the vice president. Countering those methods would help her considerably in her job protecting the vice president. He accepts the challenge and enlists old colleague Francis Negley to help carry out the mission. Froelich asked Reacher's assistance on this matter because of suspicious and threatening letters which had been sent to the vice president, but instead intercepted by his protective team. Together, they attempt to find the ones who are responsible. That book is called Without Fail, and it's by the popular author Lee Child. Well, everyone loves David Baldacci, no question about that. And this particular book called The Hit is no exception. It came out last year, and it was one of the most popular books that went out the door at the North Carolina Library for the Blind in the month of October. In 2012, one of David Baldacci's novels introduced us to a new hero, or anti-hero, you might say, as the case may be. In The Innocent, readers had the opportunity to become acquainted with Will Robey, who works directly for the U.S. government in a capacity outside of intelligence organizations like the FBI and the CIA, as well as the military. Well, Robey possesses a unique skill set that has earned him renown as a stone-cold hitman who will stop at nothing to finish whatever mission he has been assigned. In The Innocent, which is the previous book, Robey is involved in a hit that goes wrong and causes him to go on the run with a 14-year-old super genius girl who has earned his protection. Now, he evades any serious damage to his reputation, and all seems to end well for him at the book's conclusion. Enter Baldacci's latest novel, and this is from last year, called The Hit, and Roby finds himself being handed the most difficult assignment of his career. He is tasked with eliminating a former colleague and trainee of his, Jessica Reel. Now, Reel apparently has gone rogue. It seems that she is operating under unknown orders and taking out members of their own agency. When two high-profile government intelligence types are assassinated, there is nothing Roby can do except prepare for the most difficult target he has ever had to chase, someone who is all but his equal in every possible way. Reel is on to Roby and sends him text messages that seem intent on taunting him. She recognizes this as a game of cat and mouse and is hopeful to come out on top. The messages continue, some worded in a special code that only Roby could understand. It is here where he realizes that she may not be an actual traitor, but could possibly be on a private mission to expose high-ranking officials who have a deadly hidden agenda. Roby and Reel are cut from the same cloth. Both are loners who realize there can only be one winner in any contest. As he continues his pursuit of her, it becomes more a matter of satisfying his own curiosity about what actually may be her motives for killing. Each chapter presents another violent encounter or plot-twisting revelation that will leave readers breathless while continuing to keep them guessing. Roby uses all of his guile and experience to get to the truth of the matter and comes face to face with an internal threat that may exist high above his own director's pay grade. It seems that not all threats to U.S. security come from radical Islamic fundamentalists, but potentially from within our very own government. This threat, if confirmed, could change the face of the war on terror permanently. What David Baldacci does best is to lay out a landscape of the many named and faceless organizations operating under the guise of homeland security and the dangerous waters that must be traversed when dealing with them. A scorecard may be required to keep straight who is working for whom, and the line between good guy and villain is often blurred beyond recognition. The Hit is a masterful novel that allows Baldacci to show off his insightful knowledge of the internal machinations that drive our modern government security systems and combines it with his gift for creating edge-of-your-seat suspense that builds with each passing page. That particular review was written by Ray Palin in April of this year, 2013. That was The Hit, one of the latest by David Baldacci. Now here's another suspenseful book that we'll talk about. This is called If You Know Her by Shiloh Walker, and this is book three in the Ash trilogy. Nia Hollister doesn't scare easily. Come hell or high water, she intends to find her cousin's killer. She returns to Ash, Kentucky for answers. What she doesn't expect is to ache with desire every time she sees Law Riley. If any man can help her escape the nightmares for a while, it's him. But can she allow herself to take comfort in those strong arms when a murderer still roams free? Unknown to Nia, as she quietly slips into Law Riley's home, is that she's being watched by someone who is waiting for an opportunity to strike. Timing is everything, though he can't wait forever. If she's not frightened, she soon will be. Nia has made a vow to find her cousin's killer. She should be careful what she wishes for. And that is a book entitled If You Know Her by Shiloh Walker, book number three in the Ash trilogy. Now here's Here's a book that was popular a couple of months ago, and we did not have the opportunity to read this. I think it was on the top 10 during the month of September at the North Carolina Library for the Blind. It's called Guilt, an Alex Delaware novel by Jonathan Kellerman. Guilt is the name of the book. Jonathan Kellerman's psychology skills and dark imagination are a potent literary mix, says the Los Angeles Times, and this intensely thrilling blend has never been so powerful as in the acclaimed author's new novel of murder and madness. Among the beautiful dreamers, seductive predators, and doomed innocents adrift in the glare of Southern California's eternal sunshine. A series of horrifying events occur in quick succession in the same upscale Los Angeles neighborhood. A backyard renovation unearths an infant's body buried 60 years ago. And soon thereafter, in a nearby park, another disturbingly bizarre discovery is made, not far from the body of a young woman shot in the head. Now, helping LAPD, the Los Angeles Police, homicide detective Milo Sturgis, to link these eerie incidents is brilliant psychologist Alex Delaware. But even the good doctor's vast experience with matters both clinical and criminal might not be enough to cut down to the bone of this chilling case and draw out the disturbing truth. Backtracking six decades into the past stirs up tales of a beautiful nurse with a mystery lover, a handsome, wealthy doctor who seems too good to be true, and a hospital with a notorious reputation, all of them long gone, along with any records of a newborn and destined for anonymity. But the specter of fame rears its head when the case unexpectedly twists in the direction of the highest echelons of celebrity privilege. Entering this sheltered world, Alex little imagines the macabre layer just below the surface, a decadent quagmire of unholy rituals and grisly sacrifice. Before their work is done, Alex and Milo, the most original whodunit duo since Watson and Holmes, must confront a fanatically deranged mind of such monstrous cunning that even the most depraved madman would shudder. And that book is called Guilt, and it's an Alex Delaware novel by Jonathan Kellerman. And there are a couple of other books that were popular in the last couple of months, but we don't have time to get into them right now. I think we'll hold these for our December issue of Heard Any Good Books Lately. One of them is Night Moves by Randy Wayne White. That was a very popular one. And the other one is Last Man Standing by Cindy Gerard. So you can look forward to hearing about those when we get together this time next month. And that's about all for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped, simply Google or search for North Carolina Library for the Blind or call toll-free 1-888-388-2460. That's 888-388-2460. You can also use the same numbers and website to join the Friends of the North Carolina Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. It is that wonderful organization that sponsors this monthly feature on books. This program is intended for a print and visually handicapped audience. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time.